Good afternoon. I'm Bob Weismuller. I'm chair of the California Energy Commission. I would like to thank everyone for their participation today. Today's workshop is focused on presenting the Cal Independent System Operator staff's proposed principles for governance of a regional independent system operator. We are holding this workshop to give the west of the western states, the stakeholder community, an opportunity to learn more about the ISO staff proposal and to discuss it. State law established through SB 350 last year facilitates the evolution of the California Independent System Operator from a California-centric to a regional organization. Specific requirements in that legislation will be presented later by Stacy Crowley. Part of the process today's workshop is informational. No decisions will be considered, as this is a transparent window in an open discussion about a regional grid. This is very focused on the perspective from outside California. Last week there was a similar workshop located in California that was much more California-centric. Eventually, the California System Operator will make its final proposal, taking into consideration the comments you provide today or online. Before we go into detail, I wanted to remind people of the big picture goal, context. Western regional markets have existed since at least the late 60s. At that point, as the Bonneville system came online, there was also the major intertie projects connecting California and Arizona and the Pacific Northwest. Similarly, in the later 70s, there were a number of mine mouth coal plants that came online and again tied together the West. So there's been a long history of benefits by regional cooperation throughout the West. These benefits have arisen from the diversity in loads and resources throughout the West. We remind everyone of Randy Hardy's vision of the West Coast vision back in the 80s. Again, I think, so in a way, our discussion today is not new, although as with everything, it has to evolve these relationships to reflect the new resource realities and technology realities. And I'd like to talk about the two technology realities. I mean, first is that there's a real revolution going on in the power business from renewables, from their cost. Last year at the Clean Energy Ministerial, the big news was that in solicitations in Egypt, wind had been the most promising resource or cheapest resource, and at the same time in South Africa, solar had been the cheapest resource. This year in the Clean Energy Ministerial, the big news was that in Dubai, there's a very large photovoltaic project which has been awarded a contract of 2.9 cents per kilowatt hour levelized. And similarly, in Mexico, there was a recent solicitation which resulted in a portfolio of, I think it was about 4.7 on average, and again, the cheapest was photovoltaic, so it was around 3.7 levelized. So that one of the real things that's affecting all of us is the low cost of not only photovoltaics and onshore wind, but also LED lighting. Secretary Monet always points out that there's been a 90% reduction in the cost of LEDs in the last 5 years. So if you think about what the technology is doing on the generation and energy efficiency side, it's just the opportunities are sort of stunning at this stage. And at the same time, there's been a lot of technological developments on what I'll call the grid operation side. Certainly low-cost sensors are now becoming much more available. Software and synchrophasers, I think smart inverters, microgrids, and the transmission distribution operating system. Basically, there's a whole lot of options going on in what's essentially the independent system operator space. I think when we had a workshop at the Cal Independent System Operator Symposium last fall, I think it was Travis who basically said that it's really, the ISO is really just an IT approach. And again, there's been a lot of revolutions there. I would point out that for those of you with iPhones, the computing power of the iPhone is equivalent to the mainframes that California had in my first period of public service in the 70s. So again, it's just sort of the technology is really changing the power industry pretty dramatically. And I think as the technology changes occur, that means we all have to think about what that means. Many of us have been to different events talking about the utility business model and how that affects the utility business model. I'd submit that the implications are at least as strong for us regulators and the sort of what we try to do on the regulatory sphere. Now, much of California, and along with the rest of the West, is operating under an outdated power operating system model. While much of the United States is already operating under a modern operating system, in the West, we're still operating under a balkanized system with 38 different balancing authorities. I'd point out, in contrast, China has four, as does Germany, although the Germans admit that they only have four because it's a legacy of their historic utility systems. They probably should only have one. We need to find better and more efficient ways to operate the Western grid. The world has changed dramatically in the last 20 years. The ability to integrate and dispatch more renewable energy is at our fingertips. Unfortunately, we have not kept pace with the times. In California, we have established a 50% renewable goal, but we really need to look at adjusting our relationships with the West to make that something that we can more smoothly achieve. At the same time, our activities there certainly will affect your systems. You know, I think it's pretty clear that as California adds more renewables, which we will do, that tends to pull down wholesale prices. And that tends to really affect the times when power is most valuable or least valuable. So it's long overdue to have a discussion about the steps we need to take to modernize and integrate the physical operation of the West. We know this could offer tremendous environmental benefits as well as cost savings for not just California but the entire West. The track record from the energy imbalance market is already very promising. So the question is not why we should do this, but how do we approach regionalization in a way that is fair, balanced, and address the needs of all states involved? That's the purpose of today's discussion. That is the purpose of our process. Now, I want to emphasize that this is a transparent process directed by our statutes laid out in Senate Bill 350. Everything presented in today's workshop is open to stakeholder input and feedback. All comments we receive will be posted, as well as our response to these comments. We encourage participation in a broad and diverse group of stakeholders because we know that as we are transforming the ISO from a California-centric to regional model, that it's equally important that this stakeholder process, which has started from a very California-centric perspective, really has to evolve into much more of a regional discussion and dialogue. So thanks for being here today.
Thank you very much, Chair Weisenmuller, and thank you to our Mountain colleagues for hosting us here. For those of you who have been participating in the workshops in California, it's like a bad dream. You go to Denver and you see me. You're in California, you see me. So I apologize for that. But this is a follow-on to the workshops that we've had, and as Chair Weisenmuller said, it's highly appropriate that we expand this to a regional focus because we are talking about regionalizing the grid operator, making it a California-only grid operator into one that spans the entire region. And I'm not going to reiterate what the chair said, but since we're here to talk about governance, but the context is very, very important. The benefits that stand to be made will accrue to all the regions. If they're realized and if it's implemented properly, there are enormous potential benefits. We see reduced reserve margins as we pool our resources, greater resiliency as we can draw on a broader and more diverse set of resources, geographically diverse, temporally diverse. We see great benefits for integration of our renewables policy. California and Oregon have renewables policies. Nevada does. As those states implement those policies, the ability to deal with the intermittency of renewables through a broader balancing authority can save lots of money and make integration much smoother. We see streamlined transmission planning as a possible benefit. Of course, the power of using a very modern IT system with state-of-the-art economic dispatch, and real cost savings, hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars potentially. And these can be realized without prejudicing the interests of non-participating transmission owners and utilities, and while respecting and preserving the interests of all the states with our varying environmental and energy policies. That's our objective. This governance plan that we'll talk about today is not the end of the discussion by a long shot, but it reflects what we've heard in some of our internal discussions in California with stakeholders through earlier workshops, through a set of comments that we got on a May 6th workshop at the Energy Commission that was extremely helpful. Got excellent stakeholder comments. And it also reflects the very hard work that this informal body of state regulators that Commissioner Jones and Commissioner Florio have been shepherding since last fall that has brought together a lot of expertise about how RTOs around the country work and what's in the interests of our collective group of states. So we're trying to draw on all of these principles to advance the discussion forward. There are open questions, and some of them are laid out in the straw proposal. We undoubtedly will hear different ideas in the discussion today and in the comment period after this, and we welcome those ideas because we're really trying to formulate something that works for everybody. So we very much look forward to the discussion today, and thanks everyone for joining us.
Thank you. I'm Mike Florio. I'm a public utility commissioner in California. Diverse group of state regulators from around the West have been meeting and talking about these issues for what, 6 or 8 months now. And I'm pleased that the ISO has come forward with a proposal that now everyone can react to on these very delicate governance issues. The economics of integration are pretty compelling, but the politics are a bit daunting. Yeah, we have fiercely independent Western states who may not agree on a lot of policy issues, but there are economic benefits that we can all share if we can successfully find a way to put together and govern a regional entity. So the commissioners have been working, floating ideas, and now we have a proposal from the ISO that we can all react to. I'm very interested in the comments that we'll hear today, and I just emphasize that this is still the early part of the process, certainly not the end. So welcome thoughts and suggestions for how to come up with a solution that will work for everyone. Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Philip Jones, a commissioner with the Washington Utilities and Transportation Commission. And first of all, thanks to Stacy, thanks to Chair Weissenmuller Cliff for coming out to Denver, coming out to a non-California state where I think you'll hear some different opinions than you heard in Sacramento last Thursday. This is a process, as Cliff said, as Mike said, we started meeting just to give everybody a little context on this. So the commissioners started meeting about, when was it, Mike? Over a year ago at the Western Conference in Phoenix. I see Chair Little from Arizona here, and we had our first meeting in Phoenix, Doug. And Mike came in and talked about the plethora of statutes in California that could lead to a regional ISO, but he also pointed out some roadblocks and some challenges. So we started meeting. The Western Conference of Public Services Commissioners gave us a little seed money to meet in Portland. So we've had some meetings, some teleconferences. But I would say that until a few, and then it kind of morphed or evolved into the EIM work, and Chair Little has been very busy working with others to select an EIM board. And hopefully now that process is in place. So I think we've made good progress. The EIM appears to be working well. There are some issues that FERC has pointed out that we have to deal with, but I think the gross benefit studies are showing good benefits. Pacific Corps is in. I see my friends from Pacific Corps here in the audience. I always call Sarah Edmonds the poster child. You went first. You did a lot of the hard work. It's not just an IT system, but it is hard work to change all the computer software and all the things within a dispatch system, as many of you know, to make, because each point, each node has to be integrated into this very sophisticated MRTU, the California platform. So Pacific Corps went first, Nevada Energy went second, and now on October 1st we'll have Puget Sound Energy from my state, and from Doug's state we'll have Arizona Public Service. If everything goes correctly, they will be joining the EIM, which all of you know is FERC jurisdictional. And also, I would say that the publics are starting to move. Consumer-owned power utilities, LADWP, Los Angeles is going to start moving toward an EIM, the press reports. And in my state, Seattle City Light will probably make an announcement next month. So that's good, but that's the EIM, energy only. What we're talking about today is a much more significant deal. It's called a Participating Transmission Organization. So if you call the EIM baby steps, this is the full mill deal. So this is when a utility like Pacific Corps actually transfers operational control of all of its transmission assets away from commissioners like me, commissioners in the six states, to basically a FERC jurisdictional entity, which CAISO is. We have to address issues like withdrawal rights, Section 205 filing rights. There are a lot of thorny issues that we have to deal with, not to mention six state commissions, including California, that would have to approve a deal. And believe me, one thing I've heard from all my colleagues from the, especially the non-California states over the past 9 months, is governance. Governance is key. Who controls, who sets the rules for cost allocation, resource adequacy, and very important issues like that. It's timely that we're in Denver because here in the footprint of CCPG, Xcel Energy is also looking at an energy imbalance market. They're looking the other way, I think, toward SPP, looking eastward, but as we are looking westward toward CAISO. The security-constrained economic dispatch, I would say it's not just an IP platform, but it's a tool. It's a tool to get more efficient dispatch over a wider footprint. As Cliff said, geographic diversity is really important, especially for renewable resources, not so much for baseload, but for renewable resources. So we're all looking for efficient, more efficient dispatch, a broader footprint, and most studies, such as the E3 study, show significant benefits. But they don't show the costs. So what are the costs? How do you allocate those costs? What is the location of those costs? So these are issues that we've learned over the past 9 months that FERC has dealt with in many other organized markets like SPP, MISO, ISO New England. These issues are thorny. There are often disputes between states and the ISO, and let's not forget the transmission owners themselves. Finally, I think it's important, Chair Weissenmiller laid out the objectives of California, but this thing is only going to work if all states agree. California cannot drive this thing by itself. So we need to separate the technology from the public policy goals. Each of the six states who will be speaking today and in the room have different public policy preferences. My state, guess what, has a lot of federal hydro. and privately owned hydro. So we are very interested in preserving that resource for the benefits of our citizens. The coal states. Coal is not going away soon in many states. It's going to be around. Natural gas is going to be around. So there's a diverse set of resources throughout the West, the Western states, that have to be integrated through these new tools of what CAISO has. And it's I believe that it's very important to have this discussion and to have it, to have a very vigorous discussion. But again, it has to work for all six states. It just can't work for California. So I look forward to the discussion today, and I turn it over to my colleague next.
I think I'm actually going to let that
demand. Okay.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Weissmuller. My name is Stacey Crowley. I'm the Vice President of Regional and Federal Affairs at the California ISO. I'm here today to just provide an outline of the proposal that has been posted. First, a little bit of background. As Chair Weissmuller mentioned, I was going to talk a little bit about the context of Senate Bill 350, which was a piece of California legislation that got adopted in October of 2015 last year. And in that, among other things, it provided for the transformation of the independent system. Did that with the caveat that it should only occur where it's in the best interest of California and its ratepayers. And to do that, the bill set forth some studies. The ISO was to conduct some studies to look at the impact of a regional California and its ratepayers. It looks at several categories of benefits. They're up on the screen here, page 2. It is really the economic and job benefits of a regional market, environmental in California and elsewhere. We did look at benefits to environmental impact. The impacts of disadvantaged communities and the emissions of greenhouse gases and other air pollutants, along with the improved reliability integration of renewable resources. So those series of studies began shortly after this bill was passed in late 2015. The ISO brought together several consultants to perform these studies, and over the past several months, through a stakeholder process that allows stakeholders to provide input on the assumptions, came out with preliminary results. Those preliminary results were presented in May, and we had a two-day workshop to go over those results, and we are looking for comments on those. And they are a fairly robust set of studies that looks at all of those categories that I mentioned, and they indicate considerable benefits to a multi-state regional energy market in California. So with that, we are embarking on the idea that to get to regional organization, we fundamentally know that we have to change the governance of the ISO to reflect a more regional So we also know that it's a voluntary decision. The language in SB 350 also points out that that transformation, importantly, shall not alter the compliance with any state laws, and it requires the ISO to maintain open process, which we do now and continue to do. And again, as I said, note that it's voluntary, and it does acknowledge that we would need approval from state or local regulatory. So the language in SB 350 also lays out a bit of a process for us to get from where we are now to something that is. It says that the ISO should present the study results that I mentioned, those preliminary results will turn into a final report, and that both the final report and governance modifications, as we discussed here today and through this process going forward, to a workshop of the three energy agencies are the California Energy Commission, the California Public Utilities Commission, and the California Air Resources Board. Following that workshop, the ISO can submit both the study report and the governance modifications to the governor, and the governor can then transfer. There is a process that's forward, and at the end of the slide deck here, I'll show you a bit of our at least targeted timeline to get to that. So we looked at and we look at the work that happened around the energy balance market, the work around creating the governance structure for that, as a very good template to start from. And we believe that the work of that of the transitional committee that was created for those services provides a very good what we are doing now. And I think it's something that we you'll see throughout this proposal that uses the process that was set up through that committee and the work that they came out with along the way. And during that work, and since then, we have done research on what other ISOs, multi-state ISOs, look like, how they're structured, their boards, their committee structures. All that information was provided to the EIM Transitional Committee when they were looking at governance. It's all posted on our website, and it's become a useful tool for us to understand really what the options are. Are there good examples to use? Are there things that we not to do? And so I think that's also provided some meaningful background. And we certainly have even spoken to many of those multi-state ISOs, both there for the ISO side and the state regulator side, to get a lot of well with those folks. Okay. I'm going to actually put it down my throat. And I think what that did, it reflected a really robust and collaborative environment. And I think that's something that folks recognize as being very important. Relationships were made that didn't exist before. Build trust along the way, and I think that's a lot of what we have to do in California is build trust with our partners in other states. And so as we developed this strong proposal for governance principles for a regional ISO, we really took, as Cliff mentioned earlier, we really took in large part from the conversation, the papers, the discussions that happened over the past several months into account, and that was really what we think is reflected in this proposal. And that this is a beginning, we do want feedback. We know it's a place to start, and this is something that folks can react to. Following Senate Bill 350, and really following Pacific Works' expressed interest in looking at joining the ISO back in April of 2015, began having discussions with the state, as was mentioned. Certainly the ISO and Governor Brown's office, Cliff, we met with the state to really understand what their key issues were, and we took that further to then start meeting in a larger group, and I think that's been very useful to understand. And along the way, energy advisors as well. I shouldn't neglect the state, either the governor's office or their energy advisors, who have had a very large role in this and will continue to do so along the way. And we know that we have to create something that's workable for all states, as was mentioned earlier, and agreeable for all to make this really work. And so, again, it's an exercise for us and a proposal that can be shared. And as was also mentioned earlier, this proposal also follows on from the May 6th workshop that the California Energy Commission hosted in Sacramento. That was an opportunity to just begin the public discussion about governance following some of these other dialogues. The ISO provided a framework of how our current governance structure works. And as was mentioned, several papers have been developed talking about key principles of governance for regional ISO, and those were presented at the workshop, and then a panel of industry experts had an opportunity to comment on those concepts as well as their own in terms of developing a broad set of principles for regional governance. After that workshop, we had, as Cliff mentioned, over 20 sets of really thoughtful comments, and a lot of that, again, was used to develop this proposal. And I think time and thought that went into all those comments. I think they were very helpful and useful. Now, onto the proposal. I wanted to just go over, we really have 8 categories of principles in this proposal, and they are really just consisting of these, as I say, overarching principles that could evolve into legislative language, and we are proposing that the specifics of legislative governance really be developed by a transitional committee, which I will talk about in a bit. So first, the transitional committee. We know that there are a lot of details to work out on governance proposals, but in order to get this on legislative discussion and potential movement this year, we wanted to set some high-level principles and really leave the detailed work to a transitional committee. As I stated, the EIM transitional committee proved to be very useful and successful in developing the model for EIM governance. And we believe that a model such as that could be useful in developing details for regional ISO. We think that the committee should be constructed of stakeholders, a broad set of stakeholders from around the West, including regulators, and they should be experienced in the energy industry and have bring perspective, as I said. They would be committed to implementing the principles put forth in these in this document and revised document, and they would be committed to working expeditiously so that we could follow and allow the state regulatory processes to occur in a timely manner. Ultimately, the committee would submit a proposal for the ISO board. Among the principles that have been discussed, I think almost without fail, is the need to maintain state authority over their traditional policies, process, procurement strategies, and state direction. And I think that is without a doubt the most important component of this, and I think something that the ISO currently works in collaboration with the energy agencies, but we do not set policy in terms of resource mix, procurement, things like that. That is something that the California Public Utilities Commission does with their jurisdictional utilities, and we receive that information from a reliability standpoint as we operate the grid. We respect and would adhere to any other state policies and would continue to. And in this proposal, what we do to sort of ensure that is to suggest that in the governing documents we would include language that would prevent the ISO from adopting policies in any state that would diminish state authority. We would also, as we've heard from public comment and stakeholders, that we should put in our governance documents that we should prohibit the ISO from proposing or endorsing capacity markets. And we would also require unanimous approval by the board that gets created and approval of a body of regulators that we talk to change governing bylaws as related to state authority. And I think that's important. Another topic is the idea of our transparency over environmental obligations. This is something that we also developed with the EIM, where we wanted to keep track and account for GHG emitting resources coming into California in order that they comply with the California cap and trade regulations that are currently in place. And we want to do that for this regional ISO as well. So we would develop a transparent methodology for tracking and accounting for greenhouse gas emissions. And we would also continue to comply with state regulations and be flexible to accommodate future environmental rates and regulations. And this could provide an opportunity to work with other states to further compliance obligations with their state policies or their compliance with maybe federal policies. Another important principle was to acknowledge that participating transition owners must have a clear and fair ability to withdraw from an ISO. We have that now. Our current participating transmission owners currently have an exit provision that requires 2 years written notice It's fairly in our agreements, but it's worked well so far. It really provides a safety valve, although you don't want to get there. It gives the parties an incentive to make matters work while preserving the ability to unwind with something directly reconcilable. But that we would acknowledge that there should be a process for withdrawal that is clear, that allows for a voluntary withdrawal or a withdrawal from direction from the state or local regulatory body. In all cases, we need to make sure that the ISOs maintain reliability for its current customers going forward. Another important principle is really transitioning from the current board makeup that we have now to something that is regional over time, and something that would facilitate a smooth transition. Currently, our board is a five-member board that is appointed by the California governor and approved by the California State Senate. We are suggesting that the current board would be joined by four new members selected by other states. That would allow for a regional voice immediately, and then also develop a new nomination and selection process. At that time, in the initial board, the California members would constitute a majority, and they would. This would start as soon as the governance documents were adopted by the ISO. There are many ways to do this, and there are many ways to think about a nomination and approval process for an ongoing board going forward. We do have the example of the EIM Transitional Committee that they developed for the EIM, where there is a stakeholder nominating process, and in this case, the board would approve the first slate, and then going forward, the EIM governing body approved. There's something that we can do that is similar to that. We talk about making sure that stakeholders have a role in the nomination process, which we did with the EIM. And again, we need to make sure that the board members meet FERC financial independence requirements going forward, no matter how. There are ways to do this. We've talked about, again, stakeholder nominating process. The approval process could include something that has a state role. Not sure exactly what that could be made of, but there are options, and we look forward to feedback and comments on that piece. Another very important principle is the development of a body of state regulators, also called a regional state committee in the FPP model and called an organization of MISO states in the MISO model. This body would provide policy direction and input on matters of, as we propose it, it would be incorporated as a separate entity, and that is similar to how other ISOs do that, but not all. We are suggesting that one regulator from each state within the regional ISO footprint be included, and we're also suggesting that an individual from a public utility have a body. And in this case, they will have significant primary authority over certain policy issues, such as transmission cost allocation and certain aspects of regional resource adequacy. I think the details of that would be further defined by the transitional committee, as we have proposed. And in this proposal, we are suggesting that the voting rule for this body would be similar to the YRAB model. YRAB is the Western Interconnection Regional Advisory Body. And that model is such that an approval would require a vote of the majority of the members of the body, as well as members representing at least a majority of the load within that regional footprint. So it's sort of a dual voting mechanism that allows folks to recognize the load of a particular state, but that no one state could make that. And there are examples of different voting models, certainly, and examples of different ways to organize a body of state regulators. In particular, we use the RSC model, the Regional State Committee model, and the Organization of MISO States model. Thank you. So back on the body of state regulators. They will, again, have this primary authority over certain issues. And the way that we have suggested it, that the regional ISO would need to obtain approval from this body before filing at FERC on these issues. There may be some exceptions where there's reliability is imminently threatened or there's something that would undermine reliability, and we're proposing that there be some exceptions to that. There's also discussion that's not in this paper about the concept if there's a stalemate within the body of regulators, that there be some time given to the body to try to discuss the issues and come to a resolution, but at some point allow the ISO to move forward if the stalemate can. And then there's some topics that we think the transitional committee can look at and consider as it goes through its public process, including a process to improve and facilitate broad participation in stakeholder proceedings. Currently, the ISO has a fairly transparent and robust stakeholder process. Many members and stakeholders are pleased with that process. However, we understand with a larger footprint, there may be a need to the process and to see if there needs to be any improvement. Also, the development of a formal stakeholder committee. We did hear from several stakeholders that that might be a way to bring in new stakeholders and folks that want to have a larger role in, and interest in the market. And then eventually, the creation of a funding mechanism to facilitate participation by state consumer advocates. That was also discussed as something that was necessary and should be visited.
Great. Thank you, Stacey. Josh, do you have comments?
Absolutely.
Again, you can talk to the attorney about that. We'll go ahead. We'll go ahead. No. Well, please, you can make your comments to the attorney, as I told you the last time. Please sit down. Ash?
Yes. Thank you all for coming. My name is Ash Bhagwat. I am a member of the ISO Board of Governors. And I want to talk a little bit about the process by which this proposal was put together, which is that it's being presented as an ISO staff proposal, but I want to emphasize something important, which is that there's been a lot of involvement by a lot of different actors in this process, including everyone sitting at the table with me. and the board has been actively involved as well from the very beginning. And the idea is, we know this is going to be a complicated process. We know that there are going to be disparate views across the West and across California, frankly, and we know we're going to have to reconcile sort of different priorities. And one of our sort of tasks, as we see it, as the ISO board, and I think staff agrees, is to listen. We really need to hear what people's concerns are. But it's, I think it's important to, as we go into this, to recognize something important, which is just that this is important. What we're doing actually matters, and it has enormous upside. Diversification of resources and regionalization has the potential for, first of all, making renewable integration much easier. Second of all, substantially reducing cost to customers across California and the entire West. And third of all, creating significant economic and environmental benefits, again, across the West. Our experience with the EIM over the last year shows us that this is possible. We've already witnessed substantial benefits, but full regionalization would increase that by an order of magnitude. So that's why we're doing this. We're doing this because there's a lot to be gained, and California, the West, frankly, is behind the rest of the country in this area. On the other hand, as we have proceeded to think about change in governance, we have heard many legitimate concerns. And there have been many, many adjustments, and sort of there's been a lot of input, as I said, including by everyone else at this table. And what Stacey just presented is basically an opening thought. We've incorporated the thoughts, we've heard the concerns, especially we recognize concerns about preserving state authority. We know those are very legitimate. We've also heard concerns about capacity markets, and we recognize that those are legitimate concerns. We've tried to respond to them. And there may be more work to be done. We certainly invite responses. This is still very much bare bones. But we also recognize that everyone is going to have to do some compromising. It's simply not possible for everyone in the West to be thrilled with every single aspect of what's going to come out of this. It's going to be a process of compromise and moving forward, and it's important to recognize there's a reason for it, that the gains are so significant that I think from all of our perspectives, it's worth thinking about how we can accomplish this in a way that leaves everyone reasonably satisfied. That's where we're starting off. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. So let's go to questions from the dais.
Stacey, I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit more about the transitional committee and what role there could be for the states in that transitional committee and how many people would be on it. What are the thoughts?
Thank you, Cliff. I'm not detail that out in like broad stakeholder support, as well as state involvement. We want it to be a reasonable size so that people can get work done effectively, but I think you want to make sure that it asks these folks to be committed to working together through consensus and collaboration, which is what the EIM Transitional Committee did, and that works very well. And I think we look forward to folks' suggestions.
Commissioner Folio, do you have some questions?
No.
Commissioner Jones? Okay. Then let's go to roundtable discussion. Rebecca?
Thank you, Bob. You jumped more quickly than I was expecting, which I appreciate. I'm going to try and get through this as quickly as possible, not only because we don't want to belabor anything too much, but we want to get precise information, and we want me to be able to make my flight home tonight. That was a joke. Sort of. I'm going to go ahead and introduce our group of panelists, and I'll start by introducing myself. My name is Rebecca Wagner, soon to be former chair of the Energy Imbalance Market. Assuming all goes well at the next Board of Governors meeting, our work will have concluded, and we will be free to move on to the next iteration of transitional committees. And today I'm going to just go down the line of my panelists, non-Californians. This is the rest of the West panel. And I'm going to start by introducing Travis Kavula, who's on the phone. And we've been texting, so hopefully he'll be able to respond. Can we go ahead and do a check on that?
Operator, can we open up the line of Travis Kavula?
Okay. Hello, ladies and gentlemen.
Hi, Travis.
Hi.
Okay, I think I just heard Siri say something, but hi, Travis. sorry, I missed that. I'm just starting the introductions. I wanted to make sure you're on the line. Most of you all know Travis. He really needs no introduction, but he is currently the vice chair of the Montana Public Service Commission, the president of NARUC, and a member of the soon-to-be-defunct EIM Transitional Committee. What a great guy to work with, and we're very sorry that he's not here with us today because it would certainly add to the entertainment of this. And I'm going to go just down the line here. To my left is Steve Boyning. He's the Director of Market Operations at Xcel here in Colorado, and he represents the utility on wholesale electricity market design issues. He has been a promoter of regional market development in the West in order to gain more efficient generation and grid operations. He also serves on the soon-to-be-defunct EIM Transitional Committee. There's a theme here. Going down the line, Jennifer Gardner. Jennifer represents the Western Resource Advocates as an attorney and policy advocate before Western Public Utility Commissions, regional energy planning forums, legislative bodies, and other venues where energy decisions impacting the West are made. She served on the nominating committee for EIM. She's also responsible for local engagement in Utah and regional engagement throughout the Western Interconnect on topics like rate design, net metering, electric grid reliability, market function structure, been following the energy imbalance market and now the regionalization of the ISO and the Clean Power Plan. I hope you make a lot of money, Jennifer. next in line is Marshall Empey. Marshall's is the Chief Operations Officer for Utah Associated Municipal Power Systems, also known as UAMP, and has been with the organization for 30 years. Currently is participating in several committees of the Northern Tier Transmission Group and in the implementation of the CalISO, PacifiCorp, EIM, and integration efforts. Marshall also, during his career, has represented UAMPS before FERC, WEC, state regulatory agencies, and with some of the past industry restructuring groups such as Indigo, Desert Star, RTO West, and Grid West. Next in line is Abby Briggerman. Abby is an attorney with Holland and Hart here in Denver. She represents large electric consumers and consumer coalitions throughout the Rocky Mountain region in a variety of regulatory matters, including rate and reliability, as well as tariff disputes. She regularly appears before public utilities commissions, and before coming out west, Abby represented interest before FERC. Next in line, many of you know, is Bryce Freeman. He was appointed to his position May of 2003, and he currently serves as the administrator of the Wyoming Office of Consumer Advocate. The OCA provides independent representation of utility customers in contested cases before the public in Wyoming. Next in line, Caitlin Leotoris. She is a senior consultant with Energy Strategies. It's a consulting firm located in Salt Lake City with a variety of clients across the energy sector. Today, Caitlin is here representing the American Wind Energy Association, AWEA. It's the premier national trade association that represents the interests of American wind energy industry. And finally, last but not least, at the far end of the table is Mark Gendron. I hope I'm saying that right or close.
Right.
Excellent.
He is the Senior Vice President of Power Services for Bonneville Power Administration, BPA. As of March 2014, he oversees a multifaceted organization that is responsible for the acquisition and sales of wholesale and bulk power, asset investments in the federal hydro system and a nuclear plant, acquisition of additional power resources, management of wholesale contracts, and a sizable capital budget. So with that, I'm going to just quick overview of what our format is for today. I'm going to give everyone 2 to 3 minutes just to provide their initial reaction to the governance proposal. And then we'll go through section by section of the topics. I've in advance of the meeting, I asked the panelists to let me know where they wanted to be asked questions so we could be sure to establish a fulsome record. Not a fulsome like California record, but and so we'll go ahead and start down the line with Steve. Just a few opening comments, and we'll just go down the path, and I'll share my mic.
Thank you, Rebecca, and good afternoon, everybody. Can you hear me okay? All right, thanks. My kids gave me a T-shirt the other day. It said, "Iterate until convergence." And I like that T-shirt, and I like to see the initial framework here on the governance proposal. I do think we need to continue to iterate, and I do think we can come to convergence on what it will be. Let me mention, and I think, Rebecca, thank you for the introduction. I think you mentioned that Fiesco has a lot of wind, and I have a lot of wind, as some of you know. But our utility operating company in Colorado has hours where two-thirds of our retail supply is coming from wind production. We've had days where half of the energy produced in the day for our customers has come from wind resources, and we're on the way to being 30% annual energy from wind. What we see when we see that kind of variability in our resources is the need for a more liquid pool of wholesale market supply that we can use to balance that variability, and we need to see more efficient use of the grid rather than simply holding out capability to be conservative with respect to reliability, use the tools and technology that are available to the industry today to dispatch the resources in a way that makes full use of the wires. Our utility has operating companies that are in the Mid-Continent ISO and in the Southwest Power Pool. We also have a significant amount of wind resources in those markets, and we see the benefits of that more efficient pooled regional dispatch. So that's my motivation for being here today. Although I like everybody here, it wasn't just to sit up at this table, okay? We participated in, as Piesco, in the WEC and Cal ISO solicitation of comments in this process. I'd also like to point out that we're working with 6 other utilities in the area in order to see what could be done to achieve some of these goals with respect to the interests of all of the utilities in the area. The Colorado Coordinated Transmission Planning Group, Footprint, CCPG, the group of utilities going through this exercise right now and calling themselves the Mountain West Transmission Group are evaluating their options. And Phil, I do have to say, for the sake of fairness, while SPP is one of the parties we've invited to provide comments, we've also invited the Cal ISO to provide comments on how it could structure a solution for our area, as well as the Mid-Continent ISO and the PJM interconnection. So we are evaluating our alternatives as a group of utilities in the region. And I'm sorry if I'm going past my 2 minutes, Rebecca, but just in terms of general comments on the governance proposal, I would give encouragement to the idea of addressing fiduciary duties as one of the issues at the outset. I think the RTO, in my opinion, is at its best when it's acting as an agent of transmission owners and market participants while being inclusive and respectful of state and federal regulatory jurisdiction. So I think we have to be careful about structuring the fiduciary duties so that there's a clear-cut obligation of the organization, and that gives them the rudder to do what they need to do in the function. One of the things I'd make sure we point out in that characterization is that the RTO, the expanded RSO, you might hear it called sometimes, is not a rate-making organization. Its tariff services serve to allocate costs, but not to set rates. I think that's it at a general level, Rebecca, and I'll come back to the section comments. Oh, I guess I did have one other that it couldn't fit into one of the numbered sections, but just a suggestion. I didn't see any mention of the relationship between the market monitoring unit and the governance of the organization. I know that's established right now in the current Board of Governors structure, but it might be something to keep in mind in terms of the...
Thank you, Stephen. Before we go down the line, we'll go to the line with Travis Kavula for his opening comments.
Thank you very much, Rebecca. Can you hear me?
Very, very well.
Excellent. That was one of the worst puns on Folsom I've ever heard, Rebecca. But I'm delighted to join you today. Just in the way of opening comments, I've been involved in the project to try to make the Western markets more efficient for a number of years now, really since 2011, when a group of Western commissioners got together asking how more efficient dispatch in the West might be promoted. And I guess the reason why regulators either care or should care about this is that under the cost of service-based rates that predominate the Western United States, utility regulators have an ingrained duty to make sure the assets that consumers are already paying for, regardless of whether they operate efficiently or inefficiently or somewhere in between, are in fact used as efficiently as possible. And it gradually became clear over the course of the years that there were a lot of more efficient plants relative to less efficient plants that weren't operating as they should, despite transmission being available that linked those plants to load area. So I'm delighted we have the real-time energy market up and running in the form of the EIM. It's extending to the far reaches of the West now. Montana's largest utility, for instance, is commissioned a study to become a member. And I'm just delighted to see its success. I guess my high-level comments are the following. First, there's no need to reinvent the wheel here, as might have been the case with respect to the formation of other RTOs and ISOs over the past several decades. There are now a number of workable models for ISO governance in the United States, and the things from those governance models that might have to be changed in order to respect Western differences are smaller than the elements that can simply be imported and are ready-made and proven to the success of ISOs. And in particular, I would want to call out the Southwest Power Pool, which really is the originator of the model that you're seeing in the regional state committee embodied within this proposal. You know, even some of the elements of Western difference that are sometimes called out are not as different as they seem. You know, the state with the greatest concentration, for instance, of public power, Nebraska, is already a participant in an RTO in the form of the Southwest Power Pool. But I think the first and most important principle where the difference in the situation in the West really does come to a head is the fact that you've got an ISO now that's a creature of state law, even though at this moment, to this day, it is a federally jurisdictional creature. And I really think as a first principle, it needs to be articulated that a Western ISO can't be a creature of any given state's law. It needs to be an optimizing platform for whatever public policy states might lawfully adopt. You don't want to think of an RTO or an ISO as the body that's making public policy. You want to think of it, and it needs to be the body that's efficiently operating the wholesale markets, efficiently operating the regional transmission grid, and incorporating all states' public policies into its operational design. And I think that's kind of the first and most important principle that is tacitly acknowledged in this white paper, specifically on footnote one on page three. But that's sort of the equivalent of burying the lead. We need to bring that out and make it candidly addressed in a really more straightforward manner. I'll hold the rest of my comments until when we go section by section, Rebecca. Thank you for having me and allowing me to participate by phone.
Travis, and we'll move on to Jennifer Gardner. Can you guys hear me okay?
All right, great. Well, as usual, Steve Boyning and Commissioner Kavula proved to be hard acts to follow. So I don't know if I should consider myself fortunate enough to follow you guys or not, but I will do my best. So as Rebecca said in her introduction, I am a staff attorney with Western Resource Advocates. I don't think it comes to any surprise to folks in the room that as an environmental organization and one that's focused on clean energy, we are incredibly supportive of the formation of a regional market in the West. As Steve said, we've started calling this an RSO, or regional system operator. We've been heavily engaged in the variety of stakeholder processes that the CAISO is managing related to this effort, and we've been trying to provide as much assistance along the way as possible. Related to governance, I think just at a very high level, we were pleased with what we saw from the CAISO in terms of the proposal start. We don't think it answers all of the questions, but we think it's a really good platform from which we can have an ongoing conversation and reach a governance proposal that hopefully can be palatable to the multitude of stakeholders process. Just from WRA's perspective, I think there are a lot of things that we like about this proposal, but there are a lot of things that raise questions for us as well. I'm sure we're not alone in that feeling. So first of all, one thing that we are incredibly supportive of, and it's been mentioned a number of times, is this concept that this is a transition. This is a transition to governance. This will not happen overnight. We support following the model that we've seen through the energy imbalance market, the development of the transitional committee, the development of the nominating committee. We like these because we feel like it offers stakeholder input throughout the process. It offers a timeline in which to transition. But we think that, most importantly, having that diverse stakeholder input up front is incredibly important to the successful formation of an RSO. Another thing that we are incredibly supportive of is the fact that this transition approach will enable the current CAISO Board of Governors to transition to not only a hybrid board, but also eventually to a fully independent board, which we believe is ultimately necessary for the successful functioning of an RSO. I don't want to go into too much detail on the rest of my comments, Rebecca. I'll save that for the more pointed questions. But one thing that we've been supportive of throughout this entire process is recognizing the important role for states, making sure that their authority is preserved while also recognizing that we have to have a fully functioning RSO. So I think that it's an important balance that has to be struck. States do need to have appropriate authority. They need to have appropriate advisement powers, if you will, as part of the body of state regulators. But that also has to be balanced with the interests of a fully functioning and effective operating regional system operator. And with that, I will close my opening remarks. Thanks, Rebecca.
Thank you, Jennifer. Do you want to pass the mic to Bryce? Sorry, it's Marshall. Sorry to Marshall.
Yes, our beard.
All I can see is arms.
I thought it was our beards. thank you for asking us to comment. As the introduction said, we've been doing this for years. WAMP started out with the first open access contract in the 1980s with fighting for this in all of the various positive. We do have concerns. Try to highlight them. UAMPS right now has 44 members. 38 of those are in. All the comments. The market is not working. The settlement statements are absurd. I spent 3 hours last until the settlements get worked out. I can't like the plan to be fully comprehensive before sort of a few comments. One of the things that we're really worried about is the cost of this. All of the studies have always highlighted the benefits. We do agree there are benefits. That's why we've always been pro my career at UAMPS. Very little analysis of the costs of doing this, and felt that the costs outweigh the benefits of the consumers. There has to be more analysis of the cost and or of the staging of this. For example, all probably have seen the tack initiative. The tack charge, if that's a postage stamp rate, that outweighs all of the benefits to the Pacific Corp. Adequacy, maybe not as financially clear, but that's another issue that assigning the resource adequacy across the whole footprint could affect a lot of costs for the Pacific Corp. And
Marshall. Next in line is Abby. Can you hear me well in the microphone? Okay. Hi. I've been asked to speak here today on behalf of industrial customer interests, and I just sort of need to do a disclaimer at the beginning of this. Holland & Hart represents various industrial consumers in the Rocky Mountain region. My comments to not be attributed to a single industrial customer or a single group of industrial customers that would represent my generally, industrial customers are in favor of anything that increases competition in the electric industry, but the devil is in the details. I'd like to respond to some comments that were made earlier today that have implied that the benefits are clear in this. I don't think that a case has been made yet that the benefits are clear. Just echoing your net benefits test, a clear analysis of the cost before we can conclude that this is a good project for consumer interest. And I don't think that case has been made yet that this is a good, necessarily a good idea for consumer interest. One of the key things in terms of governance that is important to consumer interests or industrial consumer interests is making sure that customers have their voice heard in governance. I'd like to highlight one of the positive things we see in this proposal is the preservation of state authority aspects of this proposal. That is a very good start from our perspective. However, we do have many concerns with the proposal. This seems heavily weighted in favor of California interests in terms of the board and the body of state regulators. California seems to have a lot of authority here at every step of the way. We would like to see some more detail on the scope of authority that each committee or transitional is going to have. That aspect is not really presented here in this proposal, so the scope of authority of these is very important to understand. And finally, one major issue we have is this seems to be very rushed. I think a lot of people agree that this is a major, very important aspect of the CalISO expansion or the creation of the regional ISO. Governance is a very, very important aspect of this. However, we are just now getting the initial proposal, and we are trying to, it appears, wrap this up by the end of the summer, and that is a major concern we have. And to Abby, we'll turn to Bryce Freeman.
Hey. Can everybody hear me? Thank you, Rebecca, and I need to remind everybody that I am speaking on behalf of the Wyoming Office Consumer Advocate today as well, and my views shouldn't be attributed to anybody else besides the Wyoming Office Consumer Advocate. I think it's fair to say we did file written comments after the workshop that was held in Sacramento last month, and expressed our views about what should be contained in the governance proposal. Some of the things that are contained in the straw proposal were things that we advocated in our written comments. However, I would say that as an initial reaction, we have a number of questions, concerns, and even some criticisms about the proposal that came out. We have criticisms and questions regarding, as Abby said, the transitional and initial board and how those will be selected, and the fact that they'll be California-centric for the duration of what is so far an unspecified transition period. We have questions and concerns in a number of other areas as well, which I won't get into right now. Save those for the topic-by-topic discussion later. But I would just make a couple of general observations. This, if it was to be adopted and approved in Wyoming, would be a substantial departure from business as usual for regulation in Wyoming. We're used to being reacting to utility applications that come before the commission. And so to the extent that the commission would not be the venue for our voice to be heard, but rather it would be the ISO and perhaps the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, that's a radical departure from the way regulation has worked in Wyoming past, at least for a substantial piece of Pacific Corp's infrastructure investment. So we want to be careful, as Abby said, that we get this right, and we think it's been pretty rushed. A lot of what we view and what we've said about the governance issue from our perspective as consumers in Wyoming is informed by our work over the years, over many years, related to the cost allocation that goes on among the states in the Pacific Corp footprint. And it's my, I guess I would admonish all of us at this point to remember that that has been a fraught process at times over the past, and to the extent that the governance proposal that we have before us now assumes that all of us will just be able to somehow magically get in a room and agree about all these things, I think is unreal. We need to give a lot of thought about how this will be structured, what the scope, how the decisions will be made. Otherwise, we're going to be sorely disappointed, because I think in that type of a process, states will still be prone to advocating their own self-interest, and agreeing regionally is not something that comes naturally. So with that, I'll leave the rest of my comments for later.
Thank you, Bryce. And I'm continuing to get reminders to have people speak directly into the phone. So, Caitlin?
Okay. I'll try my best. My name is Caitlin Leoteris. I'm going to give a disclaimer as well, continuing the trend. I work for Energy Strategies. We work for a variety of clients, but today I've been asked to speak on behalf of the American Wind Energy Association, or AWEA. So everything I say today hopefully is what AWEA feels and not necessarily my own position. AWEA has been a strong supporter of regional expansion of the ISO and continues to support regionalization. Believes there are a lot of potential benefits for enhanced reliability and significant rate reductions, including the ability to access very low-cost wind energy. Just like my fellow panelists and other stakeholders, AWEA wants to ensure a governance approach is fair and balanced and is amenable to both California and non-California entities. I think as a general reaction to the ISO's initial proposal, that AWEA thought it was a good starting place. It seems to incorporate many of the comments that AWEA submitted following the May 6th governance workshop. Of course, there are a number of areas where the details will be critical to determining whether the proposal is reasonable or not and will be amenable across the West. But AWEA has seen the success of the EIM Transitional Committee and believes that leaving some of those details to a similar transitional committee is appropriate and has faith that that will be successful. I think the biggest concern for AWEA, and likely many outside of California, is the continued reliance on the current California ISO board and thus the continued control of California in some of the transitional elements and also in developing some of the key policies in implementing a regional ISO. So some of the concerns there have to do with the ISO board being responsible for appointing transitional committee members, approving the final governance details from that committee, and then, of course, the continued California majority on the board through the transitional period. AWEA believes that there needs to be broad support across the industry, and that's got to happen regardless of whether the process is controlled by California or not. And therefore, it seems reasonable to include additional approvals necessary for a governance structure to move forward, perhaps approval by some body of stakeholders or the presumptive body of state regulators in addition to the ISO board. And with that, I think that I will leave the rest of my comments to the questions.
Thank you, Caitlin. And last but not least, Mark?
I've got the microphone in my mouth. I'm last, and definitely feel like I'm at the end of a very long line. I'm Mark Gendron with the Bonneville Power Administration. We greatly appreciate having the opportunity to participate and engage in this discussion about a Western ISO governance. And Bonneville is a federal power marketing agency, and we market the electric output of 31 federal hydroelectric projects in the Pacific Northwest and some non-federal projects. Whenever requested, we are required by statute to sell power to meet the firm requirements of certain qualifying utilities and federal agencies in the Pacific Northwest. Bonneville also operates 75% of the high voltage transmission system in the Northwest, and this system is essential for PacifiCorp to serve its loads in the west side of their system. The federal hydro system is committed to many, many different uses that limit its flexibility, but surplus capability of the system, we believe, will play an important role in providing zero carbon ramping capability and also helping to manage oversupply in California and also in the broader west. BPA has a statutory obligation to serve 19 of our preference customers with load located inside the PacifiCorp balancing authority with an average load of about 600 megawatts. The governance and market rules of the future Western ISO will have a significant impact on the service that we provide for those customers. Just at very high level, our interests are really fourfold at Bonneville. First, our primary interest is that we continue to protect the value of the federal hydroelectric and transmission system for the preference customers and existing long-term transmission customers of Bonneville. Our second and also critical interest is that Bonneville must engage to maintain reliability of the Western grid as the energy markets change in the Western interconnection. That is an important interest. Third is we believe the decision-making process associated with a Western ISO should rely on collaboration and seeking consensus outcomes. And finally, we need each other. Bonneville needs EIM entities and prospective PTOs to serve our loads in the region, and members of the ISO and potential PTOs also need Bonneville to deliver power through our transmission facilities. At a very high level, our overarching comments would be that the principles as drafted reflect consideration of respecting Western state authorities in the creation of a Western ISO. They do not yet, however, consider or suggest appropriate roles for federal power marketing agencies. This consideration, we believe, is essential because of the unique situation of the Bonneville Power Administration in the Western Interconnection and the reliance of the Western ISO on coordination with BPA. The principles should incorporate the concerns of non-jurisdictional, publicly owned transmission operators who are not subject to state regulation or most FERC market authorities. Addressing these concerns requires the engagement of federal transmission operators, even if they do not currently intend to join as again, in summary, really appreciate being here and look forward to this opportunity to engage.
Mark, now we'll go ahead and turn to the actual proposal and walk through the eight. As I noted before, I have a general idea of who wants to comment on what. So I'll just go ahead and call on you randomly so you are forced to pay attention every second. Because you don't know when you're going to get called on. So first I'll turn to Travis since he's on the phone and we don't want him to. So Travis, why don't we start off with you on the first general topic of the preservation of state authority.
Thanks, Rebecca. You know, this is really a linchpin issue for states, obviously, and for good reason, I think. A lot of states, as well as load-serving entities that are self-regulating, like rural electric cooperatives and public power, have looked skeptically on certain markets, such as PJM and ISO New England, as a kind of runaway train that has gradually usurped the resource procurement function that used to be native to their decision-making authority. And so having an obvious safe harbor of these items to states and those load-serving entities in question is particularly important. And I think that's what this first section calls out. There is a lot of legal detail to it, and you get into some of that in the body of state regulators, which has certain Section 205 under the Federal Power Act tariff filing rights to direct filings through the ISO board with respect to the authorities that are reserved. But in general, I think this first section articulates a valuable principle, and it should include, by the way, the thing that I laid out in my opening comments, that the ISO has to not be a creature of any given state laws, but really a platform where all of them can be taken together and respected. One very specific caution I would make is with respect to the third bullet point, however, which prohibits the ISO from proposing or endorsing any centralized market for the forward procurement of electric capacity products. This is really an overly broad prohibition to express by principle. I don't think that anyone in the West anticipates the day where we're going to have a centralized capacity market through which load-serving entities have to procure all of the necessary capacity to meet a resource adequacy obligation, which is something that any ISO of any market design has to come up with. However, there will be a role even in ISOs where the marketplace is vertically integrated or where states direct procurement for a centralized capacity market to dispose of small surpluses or deficits of capacity. The Mid-Continent Independent System Operator runs one of these where only a small fraction of capacity in the region is cleared. And I can tell you firsthand as a regulator of a utility that operates as a PPO in MISO that has saved MDU customers a lot of money. By allowing Montana Dakota Utilities and other utilities like it to rely on a residual centralized capacity market, you're allowing them to defer resource investments that might be attributable only to momentary load growth, for instance, associated with an oil boom in the case of Montana, and you're allowing them to take advantage of a fairly clear price signal for that capacity without having to enter into a more complex bilateral transaction for that same resource. So I think a prohibition of this type should remain in place, but it needs to be more narrowly drawn. It should be expressed, in my view, as prohibiting a centralized capacity market through which load-serving entities are required to procure all of the capacity to meet resource adequacy obligations, and not a wholesale prohibition on the trading of any capacity products through an auction. Thanks.
Thank you, Travis. Jump around here. Let's go to Mark.
So Bonneville supports the state's roles in advising the independent board on specific issues that have traditionally been under their jurisdiction. But at the same time, BPA as a federal agency operates under its own statutes and we have our own separate obligations. So we believe the principals really need to recognize that those federal authorities, although often very compatible with the state authorities, are indeed distinct. So the governance structure should compel, for example, the independent board to not make FERC filings or policy changes impacting specific issues without consensus from representatives from both the states and the federal government to fully take into consideration the unique requirements that exist for the Bonneville Power Administration. Relative to...
excuse me, Rebecca, can I ask just for clarification, can you explain more what you... I understand the broad principles, but Robert, but I don't... Mark, I'm sorry, but what does that mean in practice? Does that mean that the power marketing entities have to be on the board, or that the board could only do things after a public process in which the body of state regulators consults with BPA? Maybe you can put this in your comments, but it seems I'm not quite sure I'm following what that actually means in practice.
I think what we're saying is that there may not be a perfect fit for the Bonneville Power Administration or power marketing entities on this committee, the body of state regulators, and that we are, although we have similar interests, we really are very unique, and we operate under statutes and requirements that are separate and independent laws and regulations. So, I think there could be another body that Bonneville could participate in, such as a market advisory committee. But the body of state regulators appears to be, the body that might be a good fit. We just believe it needs to recognize the uniqueness of the federal power marketing entities. Did that answer your question?
Well, a little bit, but maybe it's best if you try to address it more specifically in your written comments. How would it act? What other body you are envisioning, or how this might work in practice? That would be helpful.
Thank you. And then I think Travis's comments regarding capacity markets is, I think generally we're supportive of that. We think that the prohibition on capacity markets, although we generally appreciate that, is a bit far too restrictive, and there may be opportunities for short-term capacity or ancillary services that we wouldn't want to see limited through a broad prohibition on capacity markets.
Thank you, Mark. And just to follow up on that, what might be useful in your comments is if there's any other model or how other power marketing agencies, I know each of them are unique and slightly different, but if there's another good model out there, that's always helpful to draw from. Next, yeah, I will turn
Rebecca,
to
Rebecca, just following up for a second. Also, I was going to ask Travis if he had specific language for point three on page two. That would be useful.
I would be happy to share some.
By the end of the call or in comments or some other...
I can share it in writing.
Thanks, Travis. Any other questions from the dais? Okay, thanks. I'll turn to Bryce.
Thank you, Rebecca. This is an area where we certainly agree that any regional organization that manages transmission infrastructure and markets needs to preserve to the greatest extent possible state sovereignty and authority. We do have some questions about how that would work because there's appears to be some conflicts in the proposal with regard to authority that states have traditionally exercised over the necessity for building utility infrastructure that they would continue to exercise, that it appears to us, for example, a CPCN authority that may not fit exactly with the scope of the authority that is envisioned by the straw proposal for the RSO. So we have many questions there. And in keeping with some of the concerns that we have in other areas, we do have some concerns with voting as well with regard to the capacity markets and those sorts of things. If you wanted to, if the RSO was implemented with a prohibition against capacity markets and that was later proposed to be changed, it appears to us that it would require a unanimous vote of the board, but perhaps a simple majority of the body of state regulators would suffice to change the governing principles. Another question we're just not sure of. We are concerned, however, and this is a concern that I've heard in several quarters, that the ISO through the RA process might be able to trump the preferences of states and state local state regulatory authorities for resource mix if a utility was either unwilling or unable to satisfy the RA requirements. Would the ISO then be able to simply acquire resources to make that local utility adequate, regardless of individual state's preferences? Or so many questions about this, but in general we support the principle that the RSO ought to respect the sovereignty and energy policy choices of the individual states to the greatest extent possible.
Thank you, Bryce. Jennifer?
So I addressed this briefly in my opening remarks, but generally we were very glad to see that the governance principles from the ISO make clear that a new RSO, or regional system operator, will not impede existing state authority. Generally, WRA supports the preservation of state authority in forming the RSO because we recognize the important regulatory role of states when it comes to the effective and reliable operation of utilities in the West. Now, that being said, the ISO governance proposal still raises questions for WRA as to exactly what the state authority might look like in practice. We firmly believe that effective RSO governance must ultimately be able to strike a very important balance between the interests of participating states and the need of an independent RSO board to do its job effectively, and I said that before as well. And that job, doing that job effectively, in our view, means ensuring that the new regional energy market is being run effectively as well as reliably. So going back to the statement that I made regarding the questions that we still have after reading the proposal, one thing that's come up, and Travis alluded to it in his remarks, is this whole issue of 205 filing rights by the states. And I know that we're going to get into that probably in our discussion of the body of state regulators. But this might need some additional clarification from the ISO. The way that WRA is reading it and some of our other public interest colleagues are reading it is that the 205 filing rights of the states as envisioned by the ISO proposal take the 205 authority a bit further than what we've traditionally seen in SPP. Rather than having complementary 205 filing rights, we're actually seeing something that goes a little bit further and almost acts as almost like a veto mechanism to prevent an RSO from making 205 filing rights unless they align with what the body of state regulators wants. If this truly is the case, this would be something that's a little bit, I don't want to say more aggressive, but it does tend to give the states a little bit more authority in this area than we've seen in some other regional markets. And I'm unsure what this would, how FERC would react to this. We need to do a little bit more analysis internally before we submit written comments on it, but it is an issue that we do want to make sure of.
Thank you. Jennifer, Caitlin?
Yeah, so OWEA supports a strong role for state regulators and advocated in the comments submitted in May for a model that ensures that state jurisdiction was preserved. So the ISO's proposal seems to be in line with the principles that OWEA sought, and hopes that OWEA hopes that the ISO's proposal does address most of the concerns of the states. I think one thing that OWEA was slightly concerned about is in bullet 2 of the proposal, which notes that any policy that would diminish or impair state or local authority in the areas that the proposal lists as being preserved would be prevented, the ISO would be prevented from adopting those. And it seems like there could be a potential that any policy brought forward could somehow meet that criteria. So it seems like there might be, this statement may be overly broad and could be narrowed a little bit, maybe any policy that would materially diminish or impair state or local. So again, OWEA does support a very strong role for state regulators, and hopes that that can continue to be preserved, but there may be some way to continue that authority and also ensure that the ISO can continue to function and put forward proposals.
Rebecca, excuse me, I had a follow-up question for Jennifer about the Section 205 filing rights, but would you prefer that I wait to the body of state regulators discussion?
Yeah, let's do it in that section, so it was better to...
Thank you, Caitlin. Steve?
Thanks. Rather than attack the written word, I'll assume that there were some views of the word behind the written words that maybe I could just comment on how it comes across to me on this. Okay, I think historically the California ISO developed with incredibly close ties and collaboration with the California PC. My experience in other RTOs, I don't see that level of day-to-day interaction between the RTOs and the ISO. I see Bill Smith is in the group here, maybe former executive director of the organization of ISO states. But I just would caution, I think in terms of the expectation of the relationship between the states and the ISO, we need the ISO to be structured as an effective operating organization with real-time and day-ahead type operating responsibilities, not consulting with the PUCs on a day-to-day basis. So states and the interaction with the states needs to be designed in a way that they're engaged when appropriate, but not burdened with a whole set of new duties as a punishment for having allowed their states, the utilities, to participate in a regional organization. I think, for instance, a case where the state committee is being potentially set up for a problem, and it was addressed in some of the other comments here, is just assuming that this governance proposal doesn't need to do anything about regional transmission cost allocation, that, oh, don't worry, the state regulators, then that's almost preserving too much authority right off the bat. I think that a lot of the states, I don't want to say this in a way that is an indictment of their technical skills, it's just a reality of the resources that they have and that they can bring into a regional transition dialogue. It's tough, it's complex, and most people aren't up to speed even on the current cost allocation procedures, where this camel's nose is already under the tent. But I don't think in terms of the governance structure going forward, we could just assume that that should be taken care of separately by them. One thing, too, that's behind the lines, potentially, and the view, again, not a criticism, but just a caution, I think there are folks in California who have a view that they own the ISO as an investment. And this is not like I have $100 in a savings account, and now I'm only going to be earning on $50 if somebody else has access to the account. In that sense, you would be diluting your investment, right? In the case of the ISO, you have costs that have been funded by the people in California, thank you. And the expansion of the RSO into an interstate organization is an opportunity for the people in California to allocate those costs to a bigger footprint. So that's a win-win. It's not somebody taking away the earnings on the investment that you've made. And I just got concerned when I saw the description in some of the written materials of as creating this preconceived notion that something was being taken away by expanding instead of viewing it as an opportunity to improve the benefits for everybody, because
on the other side of the coin, for the people who would be coming in, I think the opportunity to share in an already established investment is better than the greenfield cost of starting up an alternative investment. So there, I use the investment term too, but with that guarded caution that I gave.
Abby or Marshall, did you have any comments on this section?
So I just had one brief comment. From the first bullet point under preservation of state authority, it says the ISO's new governance structure will include binding provisions to protect and preserve state authority over matters currently regulated by states themselves. I'm concerned about that word currently in there, to the extent that a state PUC is jurisdiction over matters by the legislature. I don't see why this principle should apply less to any future jurisdiction granted to a PUC. That word currently gives me pause. Marshall, anything to add in this section?
Yeah, just, I mean, one of the concerns we have, as has been said before, CAISO is California-centric. California CAISO staff, and that I think they could overwhelm all
Dias, is that you, Phil? I can only see your arm.
It's me. Just a maybe to Travis and others, Jennifer, we talked about Section 205, but 206, and I'm referring to the CPUC staff comments. I'm just going to read them. It says, the ISO Board of Management are not the only arbiters of utilities, policies, rules, and regulations. ISO tariffs can and often are modified in response to complaints initiated by a party under Section 206 or an investigation initiated by FERC itself. So a governance model should minimize any risk that FERC could order the ISO to institute a capacity market. So do you have concerns about this, about the Section 206 complaint process to FERC, and then FERC could order the regional ISO to institute a capacity market?
So, Phil, who were you addressing that question to?
Why don't we start with Travis and then maybe Bryce? I'd like to hear from Bryce on that, too.
Okay. Travis?
Well, I mean, I think it has to be acknowledged that FERC has jurisdiction today over the wholesale markets for electricity, whether they're bilaterally settling or settling through a central dispatch. And so, I mean, if the theory is that FERC could order through a Section 206 investigation upon its own motion the creation of a capacity market in the West in a regional ISO context, I think also they could order similar things even in the bilateral wholesale market. Now, I don't think they would be crazy enough to try that in the Western United States. People would get their pitchforks in a hurry. But it's true that FERC regulates with more depth on the centrally dispatching regional markets, the ISOs and RTOs. And inevitably, if the West decides to take this step, you will perhaps inevitably be hearing more about FERC. But it is also the case that FERC has had a lot to say already about the Western bilateral markets. It's conceivable they'll play a role one way or another.
Right?
Yeah, I guess my view is that the body of state regulators should have the ability proactively to file with FERC under Section 205. To me, the Section 206 process is an inferior process and shifts the burden to complainant, and so I think it's critically important that the body of state regulators retain the right to proactively file with FERC on issues that may arise before the RSO board.
Questions from the day?
Let's turn to the next section is greenhouse gas accounting. And based on early indications, Jennifer can comment, and obviously others can if you so choose. So I'll start with Jennifer.
All right. When we submitted comments to the CEC, after the first governance workshop, this was something that we actually advocated for. Again, it's probably not a surprise. We're an environmental organization. We're fairly passionate about seeing emissions tracked and kept to a minimum, if not reduced. I think one of the concerns that's been raised is the tracking of greenhouse gas emissions, as this is just another example of California having a way to impart their policies and requirements onto other participating states in this process. We disagree with that. We think we look at this in a slightly different way. We not only view this as a benefit to the entire regional market footprint in terms of tracking regional emissions, but we see this as another way to simply track the benefits of a regional market. We're not only concerned with reliability benefits, we're also concerned with the environmental benefits of a regional market and making sure that emissions can come down in the long term as a result of more efficient dispatch. So we are incredibly supportive of this provision. We think that long term it absolutely needs to be done. Thanks.
Jennifer Bryce?
Jennifer, I agreed with you right up till the point where you said you didn't think it was just a way for California to impart their energy policy on other states, and not surprisingly, being a representative of customers in Wyoming, our job is to advocate for reliable and affordable electricity for Wyoming customers. The greenhouse gas accounting mechanism seems to me to be exactly as you characterized it, as a way for California to foist its greenhouse gas policies on other states. Wyoming does not have a greenhouse gas emission standard. It doesn't have an RPS standard. There's no requirement in Wyoming law or policy, as far as I know, to mitigate greenhouse gas emissions, and the California ISO, at least to my understanding, factors in greenhouse gas emissions, among other things, in the dispatch of generation resources in California ISO. So all of that leads me to believe that it certainly could be viewed mechanism that impinges on the very state sovereignty that Section 1 that we just discussed claimed to protect.
Want to address greenhouse gases?
Yes, thank you. So generally, I think AWEA believes that a transparent methodology for tracking and accounting for greenhouse gas emissions is crucial for regional expansion of the ISO. And Bryce, I think the key point here is it's tracking and accounting for greenhouse gas emissions. And the greenhouse gas costs that are imposed on California entities or generation that is dispatched to serve California load are the only would be the only time that a greenhouse gas cost is applied. Today, in the EIM, that's the way that things work, and so we have a really good model to start from for implementing this in a regional ISO. AWEA recognizes that there are going to be challenges to getting this right, but is strongly supportive of this principle in the ISO's proposal, and thinks that with the transitional committee and the support of the ISO, we can get this right and track greenhouse gas emissions for California and implement something that only applies those costs to load served in California.
Anybody else on the panel want to? Abby?
I just wanted to sort of piggyback on Bryce's comments. As a general matter, it's a little confusing to me why this is a matter of governance and why this is included in a governance table. Accounting mechanisms seem more appropriate for other initiatives, but a little unclear why this is included in this section of this.
On this, Marshall?
Just a short comment. I mean, this is one of the things we're worried about. Cost is does greenhouse gas accounting have anything to do with running one of the times we met with CAISO and asked how come they're so expensive. Try to get in a new regional ISO is that they focus somebody wants to track greenhouse gases side of the regional ISO.
Yeah.
Turning to the next section is transmission owner withdrawal, and I believe this was an issue largely raised by the body of regulators in their analysis of this. So I didn't have many of you jumping in to comment on this. Bryce, did you want to touch on it?
Sure. Thanks, Rebecca. You know, this is another area where we just basically have a lot of questions. We certainly support something in the governance documents that gives transmission owners, either because they find it in their own best interest or because they've received an order from their state regulatory authority or otherwise, to have easy and relatively free exit from the RSO. So to the extent that that sort of high-level principle is in the document, we support that. I guess I was a little, one of the questions I had is it's unclear to me how an exit right would work in an RSO that's, say, 5 or 10 years old, where you have built some new transmission infrastructure. It's been allocated among the different transmission owners and is being recovered. What happens to that cost recovery obligation if a transmission owner decides to exit the organization? So just an example of some of the questions that we've got.
Want to comment on this section? Okay. Travis, is that you? Did you want to comment?
No, thank you.
Rebecca. Just for the good of the order, I drafted, this was a big issue at our meeting in Salt Lake City of state regulators about 2 months ago, raised by Oregon, Washington, Utah, and some. I've been talking to SPP and MISO and various folks around the region. I drafted kind of a rough paper on this, withdrawal rights, and I think we'll post this somehow, you know, on the website afterwards. Kind of a rough cut at it, but basically my conclusion is it could be long, contentious, and messy. It's not the easy in, easy out process of an EIM. It transmission owner commits to joining as a PTO. Usually there are provisions that, like in MISO, 5 years minimum, your notification process up to 2 years. So, and it's often litigated before FERC. So for jurisdictional purposes, states may have a role in approving or any other transmission order joining the ISO. But if a PTO wants to withdraw from an ISO, my tentative conclusion is it's all FERC. It's pretty much a FERC process.
That clarification, and I'm sure everyone will. It is a component, I'm teasing you, Phil. It is a component that's important to that. ISO has some provision for exit. Far more complicated than the easy in, easy out of EIM. Next, we'll turn to the Transitional Committee of Stakeholders, and I'm I'll start with Mark.
So Bonneville would prefer to see a direct cut over to an independent board rather than the transitional approach. Having said that, if a transitional board does occur and if it's made up of a majority of California ISO board members and a minority of others, we're concerned that, you know, more time will be spent on adapting existing California market designs rather than taking a holistic approach kind of from the beginning. So that's our comment relative to board transition.
Okay. Bryce?
Frankly, we have fewer concerns about the transitional takeover committee, although we do have some. Not clear in the straw proposal exactly how this committee would be structured and how it would be formed. It's not clear why it would be limited in some all stakeholders with an interest to be able to participate. The voting structure and how the stakeholder committee would arrive at decisions is unclear in the straw proposal, which is a problem because this is where much of the substance of the TAC and the RA and grid management fee and all of those other things would be up for presentation to either an interim board or a transitional board or an initial board. So we just think there's a lot of holes there that. And I guess the last thing I would say is that states have to be at the table and represented their states and stakeholders, because at the end of the day, it will be those very states that need to whatever comes out of this process.
Sorry, Abby, did you have comments on this section? This really goes to my initial comments about how this process seems to be heavily weighted in favor of California. With a transitional committee, the committee is appointed by the ISO board. And any proposal that the committee comes up with has to be accepted by the ISO board, as I read this. That's problematic. It's a hand-picked board by the ISO, a hand-picked committee by the ISO board, and anything they do is approved by the ISO board. That seems to put way too much control in the hands of California at the very outset of this entire process. I think that is a pretty problematic proposal for the folks outside of California. Okay, Jennifer, did you have comments on this?
So I understand the concerns that have been raised by Abby. I think the way that it's envisioned right now, it does seem to be very California dominant. Rebecca, I certainly don't want to put you on the spot, but you were heavily involved in the work of the transitional committee, and I think it might be helpful for folks who maybe aren't as familiar with how that process was operated to better understand how those individuals who made up the transitional committee were in fact selected and approved, because it's very similar as to what's being envisioned for this current proposal. From WRA's perspective, we are supportive of a transition approach. I've already stated that in my opening remarks and throughout my comments so far. One thing that we would like to clarify is that we believe that a diverse set of stakeholder interests should be represented, both in the transitional committee as well as the nominating committee. Also, we feel that those diverse set of stakeholders should have voting rights. In the past, we've seen a division between voting rights and non-voting rights amongst members of these various committees. From my personal experience on the EIM nominating committee, I found that we tended to work through consensus, and so this distinction between voting and non-voting rights at the end of the day really didn't matter. And by giving voting rights to all participating voices, you really process, and it's something that we're strongly supporting and will continue to advocate for in our comments.
Okay, Mark.
Hey, Rebecca.
Yeah, Travis.
If I could just chime in here, I guess in my view you could have three different alternatives to the body that's actually responsible for writing and filling out the details of this governance proposal. And there's going to be a lot of details that have to be resolved at the end of the day before, after the basic principles that should hopefully be decided in this more conceptual process. And really those three options are the ISO staff itself, which currently has the pen on this document, a body of stakeholders like the transitional committee, or something else, some kind of self-appointed vigilante group that goes out and, you know, writes a document under the authority of the ISO. You know, the third just isn't going to happen. The first isn't desirable because it's inherently California-centric, no offense to the ISO staff. And so I think really you're left with some kind of body of stakeholders. And the way the EIM transitional committee worked was similar to how WEC and PEAK populate the leadership of their member committees and representatives. And I thought that was a good one. That should probably be spelled out by ISO staff for those unfamiliar with it. It works through a kind of sector nominating and voting process that ultimately gets to the point of proposing a list of sector consensus members to approval of the ISO board. And by the time the sectors, and there are seven or eight sectors, I believe, got to the point of actually forwarding the names to the board for consideration of who to populate on the EIM transitional committee, the board had a little bit of discretion in who to place on it, but not really unbounded discretion. I mean, they had a pretty clear list of names that seemed to be the people who wanted to serve on this. Now, as was discussed earlier, the universe of issues in True Blue ISO formation is a heck of a lot larger and more important than just the real-time energy market. And so I think it is a more complicated process. It probably spells out a need for more members on a transitional committee and maybe some predefined subcommittees or tasks of that particular transitional committee. It needs more boundaries between what is governance versus what are the nascent elements of market design, whether it be TAC or GMC, since those things tend to blend together with one another. So there does need to be more clarity. You know, one thing, as long as I'm on the topic, and people have kind of blended number four and number five, the transitional committee of stakeholders and the transitional board, and I think they've blended it because it's a really complicated mousetrap that this white paper is trying to set up. In other words, you'd have the current ISO board set up a transitional committee of stakeholders that then institutes a transitional board, and then at some point in the undefined future, it becomes a final board. And to me, that may be just a little bit too complicated. I think it may be a better idea, if it is politically achievable, to have a transitional committee of stakeholders that then just features a cutaway to a genuinely independent board. After all, it's the transitional committee of stakeholders that should be vested with the governance implementation responsibilities that are part and parcel of the originating interest of states, PTOs, as well as some of the captive load entities, whether they're industrial consumers or the type of people that Marshall represents that have to pay the bills of the PTOs when they come down the line. I think you're in the attempt to be more politically accountable by creating this more nuanced and complicated mousetrap, I would suggest you're actually being less accountable possibly. And that's something to really keep your eyes on and think hard about.
Thank you, Travis. Marshall.
Hey, Travis. This is Cliff Rechtchoff. And just on your last point, I understand your concern about the complicated nature of the mousetrap. If you could elaborate on your last point, why you think it would be less politically accountable to have this be an interim board.
I just think if you featured the transitional committee as, I'll put it this way, Cliff, and I appreciate the question. I think most unsophisticated parties, and that's not meant to be a charged term, but people who just aren't eating, sleeping, breathing this would read the current proposal and think, ah, where is the real action? Is it in the transitional committee of stakeholders, or is it in this initial board? I actually think most people would have the takeaway that it's the latter, but it's really in the former where the details of the governance design are going to come to the surface. And so I think possibly by cutting out the initial board, you would draw a line under the transitional committee of stakeholders to indicate that that, after all, is where the real hard work of coming up with governance decisions is made. We see this too in the creation of the EIM board. I mean, the EIM board is going to have things to do, but that market is largely already designed, and the governance features are already in place. Those EIM board members are going to be really independent, but I'd much rather have them be the type of market experts that the nominating committee has selected, and thank you to Commissioner Little and others who are in the room who helped participate in that, than necessarily a kind of stakeholder-like or state representative model of a board. I'm not entirely opposed to the complicated mousetrap. I just want to caution that it might be overly complex unless it's judged to be absolutely necessary in the interests of political.
So did we lose you, Travis, or did you just stop?
I just stopped.
Okay. Marshall.
I think Travis made a good proposal, because our big concern about this was there was no timing on this. You were last bullet making provisions for successors to the interim board, so it seemed like they would go and go and go forever, and we didn't know what powers they did have. So I actually really liked Travis's proposal to minimize or do away with the interim board and have a
else want to comment on the transitional committee? Any questions from the dais?
I guess I have a question, which is, Ash Bhagwat, ISO board. The question is, I understand the sort of concerns about the ISO board appointing the transitional committee, but I'm wondering who else could do it.
This is Jennifer. I'll take a stab at this. Although we, in full disclosure, support what's being proposed by the ISO, I've heard a number of folks mention, I mean, this kind of goes back to the chicken and egg problem. When does this body of state regulators get created? When does this transitional committee get created? You know, one option, I guess, is if you were able to form a body of state regulators early on, they could have some type of approval authority, if you will, over a transitional committee. I'm not recommending that on behalf of WRA today. I'm simply offering it as a possible answer to your question.
I guess one way you could do it is, say, have each state designate one member and then identify a number of sectors of stakeholders that would each appoint their own member, and that would be another way of going at it.
Pointing from Excel, I just throw out a personal opinion here. Honestly, coming at the idea of market expansion from the standpoint of a utility doing business market, I'm concerned about the regulators being too strong in the process of the constitutional convention. I think that the regulator's role should be to balance the public interest after the ink is dry, not be the one that sends us down a certain highway. I think that should be the role of the principals. In other words, the transmission owners and the generators and the market participants, the load-serving entities. I don't object to regulators giving guidance to that process, but I think California made that mistake once back in its inception. Embraced the hubris that the market should be designed by regulators and legislators, and that had a disastrous outcome. And I'm not saying the governance is the same thing as a market design, and I don't want to bring up any old ghosts, but I guess I did, so there you go.
time check here. We have about 30 minutes left to cover the remaining topics. Let's move on to, which is just an extensive discussion that we were having, the initial board and transition period. Bryce, do you want to start this off for us?
Sure. As we discussed in the prior section, and I think Abby pointed out that she thought that the Transitional Stakeholder Committee really is pretty California-centric. Well, if that's true, the proposal for the initial board is the mother of California-centric propositions here, and we just have a lot of serious concerns about the fact that the initial board under the proposal would continue to be accountable to the governor of California. Current ISO board members would continue to constitute a majority of the nine-member board during the as-yet unspecified transition period. That obviously has implications for all of the things that we've been working on for the last year in the way of TAC, RA, metering, everything that will get hammered out under that initial arrangement would essentially be accountable to the California political process. We are also concerned that with regard to the other four board members, which would constitute a minority of a nine-member board. It's not clear exactly how those would be elected. The draw proposal simply says that the other states would agree on those four other board members, and the process, based on our experience, that would just invite immediate other states. You've got five other states and only four board seats. Whose ox gets scored in that negotiation? I thought maybe a better alternative would simply be to have one initial board member from each of the six states as the initial board, which could later be expanded or any alternative constituted, that may be perceived as being more fair by the Pacific Corp states. But this is a very problematic provision of proposal, in my opinion.
Bryce, Travis, did you want to elaborate more on your mousetrap?
No. I think I got out most of what I'd like. I would just like to endorse that comment that Bryce just made. I mean, And say that if you must have this feature because it's deemed a political necessity for some reason, realizing, by the way, that it may be political anathema to any other state but California, then you should at least put a very clear deadline about when this initial board expires right up front, so that people have a clear idea of when a truly independent board is in place. But in general, I think there's a lot of common ground, actually, between what you just heard from Bryce and also what you just heard from Steve Boyning. I think it behooves everyone to have in place a market board that's actually populated by independent members who have some expertise in this field. And it's certainly no offense to the current ISO board or to whoever the other states, the four appointees of them, but I think we need to realize that the decisions these people will be called upon to make may be infused with politics, but they're really ones ideally of market design. And the big questions of initial tariff design and governance can then be left to be sorted out through the public processes that are already underway now and through this the stakeholder-populated transitional committee.
That leads to the genuine stakeholders, including the people who actually own the assets and are paying the bills and regulating those people respectively, the decisions that are more infused with politics and call for some essentially deal making, and it leaves the more complex matters of market design to the people who are actually running the ISO.
Okay, I'll turn to Abby. I just wanted to say I couldn't agree with Bryce more. He makes very excellent points, particularly the fact that California is guaranteed at all times a majority vote in this structure, and that's in bullet point four. And again, it's ISO, it's the existing ISO board, which is appointed by the California. A guaranteed minority right for all the other states is very problematic for anybody outside of California. Oh, sorry, and one more thing. There's very little to nothing in here about the scope of authority of this initial board or what they're going to be doing. I'd like to see more information on what the initial board is tasked with doing. Marshall, did you want to comment on this section? And reminding everyone, I'm getting notifications that we need to.
Yeah.
Okay. Jennifer?
Yeah, I'm actually going to ask a question, if that's okay, Rebecca.
Depends on who you're asking.
All right. Well, I've been intrigued ever since Travis brought up his sort of counter proposal and using his mousetrap analogy, which I may need more clarification on, but. From how I understand Travis's proposal, he's looking to basically not abolish, but skip a step in the process and make this less complicated. Go from the current Board of Governors, use the skills of a transitional committee, which would be made up of a diverse set of stakeholders, including states, to develop the governance documents. But eventually, you go from a CAISO Board of Governors to the fully independent regional board, and you skip the step where we have the hybrid board. So I'm curious, since we've heard some concerns from both Bryce and Abby, if what Travis is proposing, which I think is very interesting, if that's something that would give you a little bit more, I guess, assurances that this would not be as dominated by California interests as what you're saying.
Bryce, Abby, you guys
want to
take a shot at that?
Well, as I understand Travis's proposal, it certainly sounds, at first blush, like an improvement over what's in the straw proposal, but I would certainly reserve judgment on that until I just don't see how this is going to be acceptable to states outside of California without some modification to the extent that Travis's idea limits California's influence, that would be an improvement.
Abby, any thoughts? Yeah, I hope I'm interpreting your question right, but I don't necessarily see the relationship between speeding up the process to a new governing board and mitigating California's majority rule throughout this entire process. I mean, when we get to the final stage of things, and I'm sure we're going to get to this in a few moments, but when we get to the final stage of things, California still has essentially what I've been calling a veto authority over everything anyway. So I'm not entirely sure what the relationship between speeding up the process to the final board and reducing California's majority vote or mitigating California's. Caitlin, did you want to add anything?
No, I think the things that I was going to say have been covered. I think generally OWEA would probably support a faster transition in that it would mitigate some of the concerns about California dominating the board for an undefined period of time. In some ways, maybe I'd go back a little bit to the transitional committee. One thing we didn't talk about is how their
final recommendation is approved, and maybe if there is, in addition to a faster cutover to an independent board, also some additional checks and balances there so that it's not solely approved by the ISO board, but also approved by the presumptive body of state regulators or by some stakeholder group, would help address some of the concerns that I'm hearing from Bryce and Abby, and I know it doesn't address all of them, but I think that would get us a lot further.
Anybody else want to comment? Steve?
I'm sorry if I'm talking too much, y'all, but there's one, just let me throw out an observation that the transitional committee of stakeholders that's listed in number 4 structurally has quite a different role and set of responsibilities than what the transitional committee had for the energy imbalance market, just in my view. The transitional committee for the EIM had to figure out how to do something as an add-on to a given organizational charter for the CalISO, do it in a way that didn't mess up tax status and that addressed the concerns of the EIM entities. But, I mean, fundamentally, this transitional committee of stakeholders, I think it should be that is writing the charter and bylaws for a ground zero regional transmission organization, and it might want to be addressing how it transitions the existing CalISO structure into that new regional structure, but it's coming at it from a different and kind of fundamentally, you know, bound way.
Any questions from the dais? Okay, I want to keep us moving along here. Our next section is the composition of the ISO board. Wanted to jump out and address this. Does anybody want to make any comments on this section?
Well, can I ask a question about if people have any comments and they can put it in writing about what role states should have on a nomination on the nominations committee or in the approval process of the permanent board? That would be interesting. We sort of left that for further input, and that would be interesting if folks have specific suggestions about that. This is once we get past whatever mousetrap we keep in place, complicated or simple, we'll have a permanent board, and we'll have a nominations committee and an approval process. And we've heard different suggestions about the role state should play in that or others, but I think in particular what role state should play.
Does anybody want to respond to Cliff's comment now or think about it and put it in writing? Jennifer?
Again, I've been saying this fairly repetitively, so I apologize, but to your question about the nominating committee and the role of states, from WRA's perspective, we do feel like the EIM model works very well. Again, as someone who served on the EIM nominating committee, we had a state representative. Chairman Little is with us today. He was on that committee with me as well. And again, it worked very well. We had a representative from a number of stakeholder interests on that committee. It functioned incredibly well. Like I said, even though there technically were voting versus non-voting interests, I believe all interests should have a vote. Our committee tended to work through consensus, so that distinction really became irrelevant. But I envision something like that for this process as well.
Anybody else want to comment on that right now? Okay. Let's turn to the establishment of the body of state regulators. I think this should lead to discussion, and out of deference to my colleague, that's still the commissioner, Travis, do you want to start off this section?
Sure. So each one of the ISOs that has a multi-state footprint that exists has some kind of body of state regulators, and their functions are really well described in the materials the EIM Transitional Committee put together. There's an excellent spreadsheet that I would recommend to everyone that describes their different functions. As well, I think I understand that Bill Smith, the former executive director of the Organization of MISO States, is in the audience there. Bill is, raise your hand and wave, Bill, if you're there. He is the author of an excellent academic article that describes some of the origins and purposes of such bodies. There's been a healthy debate over what kind of authority a body of state regulators should have. The proposal is mirrored, as I understand it, after the Southwest Power Pool's Regional State Committee. It's housed within the ISO itself, and it has Section 205 rights that are essentially borrowed from the ISO's native powers of tariff filings. There's a healthy debate that has to happen over whether to house such a body within an ISO or as a separate organization like Bill's OMS or PJM's OPSI is. I don't have, at this point, a strong opinion about that because I think there are good arguments on either side of the process. There's also a crucial distinction here in the sense that one of the individuals on this body is from a publicly owned utility. As I described earlier, the Southwest Power Pool has a considerable amount of public power. There, it is assumed that the state utility commissioners who traditionally sit on the RSC are representing not just the sort of public interest of their state in relation to investor-owned utilities, but also the public-owned utilities and the rural electric cooperatives. And so that level of trust in the representation of state utility commissioners may not exist in the Western United States. And if it doesn't, and if there's a particular need for public power to have its own representative on this body, that might be something that's an argument in favor of having someone in an advisory or non-voting role on this body, since they are, in fact, self-regulating. They're their own regulators. That being said, they're also market participants, and voting or non-voting, it does throw a bit of a complication into the nature of that body, and it's something that needs to be thought about as well. At this point, again, I don't have a strong opinion on that one way or another. I just note it because it is very different than the norm. It's also been noted that this body does seem to have a lot of reserved authority and power. That's true. And it has authority over things that some state commissions don't have a lot of personnel horsepower behind. That, I think, makes the argument for having some kind of professional staff that's dedicated to these issues and under the charge of any regional state committee. Clearly, this committee is going to be considering proposals that have had a lot of work done relative to them by people other than the employees of state commissions or employees even of the ISO, perhaps, that they consider. I will say, ironically, in the rush to grant reserved powers to the states in the West, and this is kind of an irony I don't even know that I should mention as a state regulator, but it almost seems to have given state regulators more authority over certain things than they might, some lawyers would say, have already. The subject of transmission cost allocation, for instance, is something that state regulators functionally have a certain amount of control over, but it is, as any lawyer will tell you, jurisdictional to FERC. And ultimately, if there's a conflict, FERC is the one that would set the rates for transmission, even if, because of their siting authority and powers like that, states would be able to functionally deny the siting of transmission lines that were not considered efficient or in the public convenience and necessity. So more thinking does have to be done about that. However, I do, in the end, support the same reservation of authority for the Section 205 filing rights that exists in the Regional State Committee of SPP, and it is, broadly speaking, accurate to say that the Regional State Committee there enjoys both authority over resource adequacy and transmission cost allocation in order to preserve or further effectuate states' resource planning rights, as well as their transmission siting and CPCN rights. So I'll conclude my comments there with a general endorsement of this section while flagging a few very important issues that need further consideration.
All right. Thank you, Travis. And being mindful that we have about 10 minutes left in our panel, I'm sure we might be able to do a little overlap. Mark, we haven't heard from you for a while.
I think Travis made a number of very good comments, and all I would add to his point is that we feel that this committee needs to have the consideration and resources so that there is a real strong goal of the board to achieve consensus with this advisory body, with this body of state regulators. Travis opined that potentially adding a public power representative might be worthwhile, and I would offer that in addition to that, as I had stated earlier, this may be the right home or place for the Bonneville Power Administration as a federal power marketing entity.
Hey, Marshall.
Yeah, this is sort of my primary subject here. First, to address Travis, the reason the public power wants a position on this is we represent the regulators don't represent us on this committee. Again, cost of the organization. We see strong CAISO staff is very smart and very good. Without the board getting viewpoints from regulator committee, state committee, and also we want a market advisory committee. Strong state advisory committee with one or more positions.
Abby, did you want to comment on this section?
This just sort of echoes my general theme that California has too much authority in this whole proposal, and that really comes down to the second to last bullet point in this section, which requires a majority of the load for any approval or any vote. And that's California by far. It's not even close. I don't know the exact numbers, but I think California's load is approximately four times as large as Pacific Corp. And so it would take a long time and an addition of a lot more load before California's ability to veto anything through this provision would be mitigated. And so this kind of ties in with the TAC revised job proposal, which gives the same body of state regulators the authority to both vote to build a policy-driven project and the cost allocation of the policy-driven project. Having California have that much of a vote or veto authority in policy-driven projects, whether to build them and how the cost allocation works, is pretty problematic from a non-California. Abby?
Well, we just need to get California to save more energy and install more net metering systems. And soon enough, we'll be in a good position. In all seriousness, I do think, you know, if we're take, you know, at the end of the day, this is going to require mutual trust between California and non-California, and I do think inevitably there are going to have to be fallback governance features that enable both the non-California parties and California some kind of a veto right. And hopefully the idea behind this is that those vetoes will never actually be used because their presence will induce the creation of some kind of consensus. But I appreciate Abby's comment, and especially with respect to the initial transitional board, it seems particularly flagrant to me.
Yeah, this is Bob. I was going to note that Ron Binz's paper has some different scenarios that get to this question, you know, of when things might switch on the 50%.
Okay, but anybody else want to comment on this section? Because we have about 3 minutes left on our panel, one more section to go. Steve, I know you want to talk about it. So.
Thank you. I'll try and be brief. Look, as a stakeholder in MISO and in STP, I interact, or our organizations interact, with both of those state committees formed acceptably. I don't have like a preference of one design over the other off the top of my head. But just like we as a utility participate as a stakeholder in that process, I'm concerned to think that there should be somebody who's more of a stakeholder than me. And why market participants in the form of public power should have some defined role as a stakeholder when that seems to me like a super vote or that, and I just have a reaction to that. And then on the other section, with there's this sub-bullet A that talks about the body of state regulators plays a lead role in directing policy for the regional ISO. Well, policy is huge. State committees is it addresses issues with respect to rate filings and cost allocation. Bill, and you correct me if I'm wrong on my perception, it's not anything that has to do with policy. And just as a standard of improving the process, unless the state committee wanted to, that it should have to vote on everything with respect to every 205 filing that the RTO makes, it should have the option to offer an alternative if it doesn't like a 205 filing that's being made by the RTO. Just an opinion on my part that if you take the state committee and make them review and affirmatively accept every 205 filing, that's a lot of work.
Anybody else want to comment on this section?
Rebecca, I was just going to, on the point Steve just made, the point about what role public power should have, should they have a seat or not. When we met in California, there was discussion if the public power is on the body of state regulators, should they have a voting role or just an advisory role? So I think it would be useful if we got comments on both those points and others, what the proper role is on it. Should they have a voting role? Should they just be in advisory capacity?
That was a hotly debated topic of EIM. We spent a lot of time going round and round on that, so I'm surprised me that comes up as a sticking point. Next, we'll turn to the stakeholder processes and stakeholder participation. ISO listed out a few considerations. But I think that there was.
That's coming. That's coming.
Excuse
no, that's
me,
coming later. Look at the agenda. Look, there will be a public comment session after this. Please sit down. After this.
So Bob.
Right.
And sir, it says listed times are general guidelines only. So we're going to get to that as quick.
Well, this is your second shot, so let's go forward. Rebecca, who on the panel wants to address this issue?
So we'll start with the going down the line here. Who wants to jump in first on the stakeholder process and stakeholder participation? Caitlin?
Okay, so I'll be very quick. AWIA supports the ISO's current stakeholder process, which seems to allow all interested parties to have their voices heard, and in whatever's developed in the future, broad participation from a large cross-section of the industry should definitely be continued. Right?
We're not terribly familiar with the ISO stakeholder process, only through the RTO development that we've had here, so we don't have a great touchstone, but we do support a strong stakeholder process. We think it should be funded. Without funding, stakeholders such as the Wyoming Office Consumer Advocate and others will be unable to participate. That will we think that a funding model should be established up front before filings are made with the states by Pacific Corp. And lastly, we do not support a stakeholder process and a funding model in which chartered consumer advocates like the Wyoming Office of Consumer Advocate are lumped together with so-called like you guys, I don't think that we represent the same interests. And
no offense taken.
We should be represented independently.
Jennifer? Caitlin? Comments?
Yeah, I'll be quick. I actually do agree with Bryce's concerns. I think historically the public interest groups, we saw this on the nominating committee as well, have been combined with consumer advocates. And although our interests oftentimes do align, I think our end goals can be slightly different in terms of how we'd like to see them implemented. I think that's just based on our different missions. And so I do support Bryce's concerns there that there should be some separation between these different interest groups and how they're represented on a stakeholder committee. WRA also, at this point, and we'll think this through a little bit more before we submit comments, but we are supportive of a more formal stakeholder process that looks slightly different than what we see at the California ISO today, which is probably best described as more informal and focused along topic areas rather than a formal stakeholder group that advises the ISO. And again, I'll elaborate on those in our comments, but we would like to see something slightly more formal, and along those lines, we would like to see voting roles for the various interests, including public interest groups. Thank you.
Steve and Travis, to the extent you've been involved in some of the other stakeholder processes, any comments?
I don't have any comments, but I'm really excited to hear what that stakeholder has to say during public comment. Thank you.
Oh, sure. Anyone else on the panel?
Just quickly, as I said before, we're in favor of a market advisory committee, a formal role advising the CAISO and the board.
Okay. Anyone else on the panel?
Yes, this is Abby Bergerman. Industrial consumers are always in favor of anything that allows them a greater voice in any of these processes to the extent that a committee of consumer interests or large consumer interests is created. We'd obviously be in favor of that.
Okay. Anyone else on the panel? If not, then I'll thank the panel for their contribution. Again, encourage everyone to do written comments, and we'll transition to the public comment. At this point, we have three blue cards. I don't know if anyone else who has comment, please see the public advisor, fill out a blue card, and we'll let IAD's representative go forward. 3 minutes, please. Again, if you have a public comment, please fill out a blue card. Go ahead, Jan. 3 minutes.
I'm wrestling with and encourage everybody to provide a little more detail on the state regulators and the authority that they would have over the trans. We're not familiar with the sort of new world within the ISO. So this is sort of a step into this. I would have
Okay, thank you. Robert Kahn.
Hi, it's Fred Hewitt, Northwest Energy Coalition. We'll be submitting comments along with other groups, I'm sure. I just have one question, really, as much as anything, which is why the proposal is following the idea of a body of state regulators, as with SPP, rather than a body of states, as with MISO or OPSI, OMS or OPSI, as Travis mentioned. Realize that there's some, you know, nuances to this, but it might be, in particular in representing public power, it might be better to have a broader representation. I realize that could create complications as well. So that's my question or comment.
Well, thanks. Any information you have to help us clarify the differences between the two would be good in your comments. Thanks. Anyone else on the line?
This is Fred. If I could add one more comment, if you don't mind, just to to add in support of what Mark Gendron was saying, it's very important for the PMAs in the West, Bonneville and WAPA, to be represented in some fashion in this process. So I just encourage there to be some additional thinking along those lines. Thanks.
Well, again, if there's anything in the examples of the existing ISOs on how PMAs are part of the process, certainly that information would be useful to us.
Both on the phone as a reminder to get into the call queue if you hit #2 on your phone. Operator, if you go to the next caller, please. Caller, if you could please state your name and the company that you represent.
This is Ben Tanzi at California Energy Markets. I didn't actually have a question except to say that the phone audio was really shitty on this call. But I just wanted to pass that on to administration. Thanks.
Okay. Anyone else?
Operator, if you can go to guest 57. From guest 57, if you could clearly state your name and the company.
Guest 57 was actually Ben's audio line.
Okay, then there's no one else in queue.
Okay, then this meeting is adjourned. Actually, now, before we adjourn, are there any comments from anyone on the dais?
This is Cliff Rechtschaff, and we thanks everybody for their participation. We obviously have a lot to chew on. I want to underscore what Chair Weisemuller said, that there are the more specific you can be in your written comments on the areas of concern, and specifically with language or with areas that have come up as areas we need work on or specificity, the better, and we'll keep working to try to hone a proposal in the next weeks and months ahead.
Reminder, if you could please submit your written comments.
This is Commissioner Jones, and just thank you all for coming. Commissioner Florio and I are going to continue the process, kind of this informal discussion process, and welcome participation in that process as well. Meet tomorrow, and we'll probably have some more meetings. And we're doing everything we can to try to work with the schedule that Bob and Cliff have laid down to the states to try to get something done, even though it is rushed by, you know, in the next couple of months.
In that case, again, I want to thank everyone for their participation today. And again, looking forward to written comments. Go ahead.
And written comments are due on July 7th. And if you could please submit those through energy.ca.gov website and for all of you who received the information about this meeting.
Okay, meeting's adjourned.
Concludes the call.